Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Little dramatic pause there. I was going to see if Dan wanted to bring it in from Dallas, where the SEC Media Days are going on. And Dan Peck is there representing The Drive. We have full representation, though, here in the studio. Bill, Coach Don Dunn, and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com are here in the studio, anxiously awaiting, any of the information from day one of the SEC Media Days in Dallas. Drew at the controls, and with that, let's check in on the Big D with the Big D and Dan. Or not. Do we not have him? We'll check in with Dan. That's why we're here in the studio. Don, how are you doing?
Doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me. Good to see you guys.
Oh yeah. And Brian, I mean, it's even though SEC Media Days are going on and it's the official introduction of Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, there's plenty of things going on, you know, back here in the Auburn area around Auburn Athletics.
There very much is. And, just some news today, basketball added a big, I wouldn't say home and home, but two games against Purdue, one in Birmingham.
Huge non-conference matchups. And we'd been hearing, and, you know, I was almost wondering if there was a problem because we'd been hearing rumblings of Auburn-Purdue matching up in December in Birmingham, and now it's official.
And it should be a great matchup. I mean, you look at Auburn non-conference, they've got a game lined up with Duke. They're in a big tournament with a bunch of other good schools like UConn and such. So it's going to be a very, very competitive non-conference schedule for Auburn basketball. Maybe one of the best they've ever played, which is great because I think this is one of Bruce Pearl's best teams.
Right.
And then, you know, football has sold out season tickets, which I think is big news again for that program. Baseball.
A lot of baseball news. Auburn with a huge addition, maybe an even bigger returnee. And then the news appears good thus far through the Major League Baseball draft.
Yeah, better than I would have even dreamed of, really, for that. But starting with Cade Fisher, the big left-hander from Florida, has got a fastball that can hit upper 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You saw him have a really good World Series appearance. And a guy that's got 2 years of SEC pitching experience as a starter and a reliever. 124 Ks and 108 innings pitched. So he can bring it. He could potentially be a weekend/number one starter.
Oh, yeah. There's no question he's got the potential to do that. Was more of a starter as a true freshman. Struggled a little bit with his control.
Yes.
This past year.
Yep. So that's just something he's got to work on. But gets a new home to try that out, and a new staff to work with, and just a really important pickup for Auburn. They wanted a established – talented left-handed starter, and I think they really got that. Cade Fisher, Cooper McMurray announced he would be back.
He missed the appearances. He didn't want to stop the appearances. That's here on right. The Drive. I'm sure
that's right. But a big left-handed stick in the middle lineup, you know, to go along with Ike Irish and some guys coming in.
Yeah,
and
Cade Ballou, another big lefty bat. So
yeah, so you're starting to feel a lot better about what this team is going to look like going into next year. And then with the draft going on, let's see, Chase Alsop went in the fourth to the Baltimore Orioles.
Mm-hmm. That's the only one that I'd seen.
No other Auburn players, our commitments, our signees have been picked, our transfers.
And that's the surprise. As a matter of fact, I was telling you, I was watching MLB, just flipped it on to see if there was an update. And I saw one of the analysts, I don't know if it was Callis, I'm trying to remember who it was, I heard him say that in his mind, heading into day two, rounds two through ten are today, yeah, that he felt the top undrafted high school player was outfielder and Auburn signee, mm-hmm, Demarion, what's his?
Bub Terrell. Yeah. He's from Thompson High School, right here in state. Really talented outfielder, can run, can hit for power, has got a really good arm too. He's used as a pitcher there, but at Auburn he would be probably a full-time outfielder. So that's interesting.
Because, as you said, they're in round nine right now, right, and he hasn't been drafted.
Which means he's probably been approached by teams. Whatever they've offered him hasn't been enough. And, of course, rounds one through ten, you've got slotting.
Right.
So right now we're at round nine, pick 287? Yeah, 287. The slot for that is $194,000.
Well, if he's a guy that was being talked about as a possible second rounder,
right,
that's hundreds of thousands of dollars difference.
Now, what can happen once we get to 11 through 20? Teams that have managed to save money, mm-hmm, through the first 10 rounds where that slot is, because they don't give you all that slot necessarily,
right,
can put that extra money towards signing a guy maybe that could have been a second or third round pick that you picked in the 11th or 12th round. So there's still that possibility to, mm-hmm, consider.
But thus far, that's good news.
Yeah, very good, I think.
And so that's it thus far with the draft. Good for Chase. I mean, man, what an organization. Who would have thought that just 3 or 4 years ago you'd have been saying that about what a great organization the Baltimore Orioles, because they were so bad for so long.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
But they're so good.
Yeah.
Now, and they've got such outstanding young talent. He could be joining another former Auburn signee. And Gunnar Henderson, the all-star shortstop. Yeah, who just dreams of what if,
yep,
if he'd had a chance to see him. But, we're underway. We are efforting, having a little bit of a technical problem. We're going to, I'm sure, get with Dan, who is out in Dallas. Day one of SEC Media Days. Four teams coming in today. Auburn only facing one of the four today, and that's Vanderbilt. Clark Lee is in Dallas along with his players. The other teams in Dallas today for day one of SEC Media Day, South Carolina with Shane Beamer and LSU and Ole Miss. It seems funny to say, that here are teams Auburn's not going to be facing, yeah, because Auburn has faced LSU and Ole Miss ever since the SEC expanded for the first time back in 92. Mm-hmm. Now,
in many ways, LSU, I think, replaced Tennessee as
absolutely
a rival
for
Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Me growing up, it was Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, and Florida
right, mm-hmm,
every year, pretty much. And then LSU and, Ole Miss sometimes.
Sometimes Ole Miss.
But, yeah, Arkansas, they had some interesting games here, and Auburn's played some pretty good games there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Arkansas probably a little more than Ole Miss, although, there have been quite a few things. Don, of course, mm-hmm, you were part of the group that came over from Ole Miss, so there, yep, were serious feelings there with Auburn, okay, and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And then now Hugh Freeze,
yeah,
has those ties.
That's
with
true.
Ole Miss as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. As a coach, we always, when the meeting started, you kind of got that feeling in your stomach. It's here. Even though it's a little ways off, but
it's
vacation
close.
Was over, everything's changed.
As we That's probably what it was, Don. It's like, oh, vacation's over.
And then I saw the bills come in, but anyway, we better win some games, right?
Yeah.
To pay for this.
It doesn't seem like it's been 20 years or whatever since Eli Manning was playing here at Jordan-Hare Stadium, right?
It's crazy.
He's played a great NFL career. Now he's retired on TV, but it's just wild how that happens.
Yeah, and his nephew's waiting his turn at Texas.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
Time flies. I'm telling you, it's already the middle of July.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. I believe we have Dan with us. We've gone to alternate methods. That's one thing that's great. In the old days, if the phone lines weren't working, you were out of luck. But we have Dan, I believe, joining us on Skype from the Omni in Dallas, where day one of the SEC Media Days is going on. Dan, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you fine.
All right, excellent. Yeah. I was panicking there because I heard the intro and nothing else. I was like, one of us?
Well, I gave it about 5 seconds, and when we didn't hear you, I went ahead. So So at least
I knew it was probably being handled back at headquarters. And hopefully, yeah, we'll see if we can get the Comrex online with you guys. But in the meantime, yeah, it's been a really eventful, fun day. You can tell it's a new era in the SEC. You know, going from as the video says, and I'm sure you'll hear it a lot, going from 14 deep to 16 strong with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma to the conference. And as you guys were just talking about, a lot of familiar games aren't on the schedule this year because you had to find room for Texas and Oklahoma on everybody's schedule, and you didn't go to 9 conference games, which would have maybe made the transition a little bit easier. So, yeah, no Ole Miss, no LSU on Auburn's schedule. Of course, I don't know if it's necessarily the worst thing in the world when you're talking about two preseason top 10 teams.
No kidding.
Hugh Freeze is necessarily volunteering to put Ole Miss or LSU on this year's schedule, but no, it's a different kind of feeling at SEC Media Days because clearly the family has grown.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting listening to Greg Commissioner Sankey earlier this morning. Yes, not only from 14 deep to 16 strong, but 16 today and 16 tomorrow. Now, he didn't say anything about day after tomorrow or a couple of years down the road. I don't think he really wanted to be pressed too much on that, but he made it pretty clear that the SEC is very happy where they are, but he didn't completely eliminate the possibility of future expansion.
I think the SEC was pretty happy where they were 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Texas and Oklahoma end up in the equation as well. So, yeah, I don't know if the plan is to grow the SEC necessarily, but I also think that if a couple of the big fish in the ACC became available, I wonder if the SEC would stand back and just let them go to the Big Ten without any sort of competition or any sort of intervention. So, yeah, I mean, you get the feeling, I mean, maybe we're at 16 for a while. Maybe we're at 16 for a month, and then there's news before the start of the season about who else could be joining the SEC. But it's an arms race, certainly. And I mean, we've seen it go down from the Power Five to the Power Four, or whatever you're calling it now. And yeah, you wonder how long that number is going to stay where it is.
Absolutely, with Florida State and Clemson suing to get out of the ACC, they obviously want to have a landing place, and like you said, I can't imagine the SEC just going, well, we'll let everybody else have first dibs, then we'll see what we can get. That doesn't mean that the Florida State and Clemson may be the top priorities for the Southeastern Conference if the ACC does break up, but you can count on Greg Sankey and the SEC to be pro and not reactive.
Yeah, I would expect exactly that. And Sankey's, he's just you feel like the SEC's in excellent hands with Commissioner Sankey. I think he's somebody who clearly has his finger on the pulse of major college athletics. I was able to ask him in the small room, Bill, about his level of satisfaction with the current college football playoff model, the 12-team model with 5 guaranteed spots to conference champions, and if there's mm-hmm. anything he would want to necessarily change from that moving forward. He gave me an interesting an answer on that. I think Drew has that. We could play that at some point.
Oh, that'd be good.
You want to hear Commissioner Sankey talk about, yeah, sort of where he stands on the college football playoff at the moment and how things could change from where we are now moving forward.
Sounds good. We're due a break. We're just underway here on the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan, of course, is at the Omni in Dallas. What you got, Brian?
Just quickly, Tanner Bauman to the Yankees in the 9th round.
Oh, good. So
271 overall, I think it was.
A lefty. I mean, yeah. Always attractive there at Yankee Stadium with that short right field.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Back with more from Dallas and from here in Auburn. You can join in as well, 334-321-1390. That's The Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Or you can text us on The Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. We're back with more. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
When bones get out of joint or vice versa, the orthopedic.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. The coverage live from SEC Media Days here as we roll on. Dan Peck on Radio Row. And we've been joined by one of our favorites. One of our absolute favorites has popped in for a drive-by appearance on Radio Row. And that is the great Doug Amos in the house. How you doing, man?
We're kind of a team now, right, Dan? So, you know, I've always had great respect for the job you and Bill do. And I'm just happy to be a part of the deal now with 7 straight hours of coverage for the Auburn-Opelika area here in Dallas.
We've had, some excellent coverage all day long for folks listening on ESPN 106.7, Jacob's show, and, of course, you getting us started with the roundtable. I mean, just outstanding stuff. Want to say thanks to the Orthopedic Clinic, Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, Wisdom Law Firm, State Farm Agent Callie Brian Chadwick, and University Ace Hardware. They are our presenting sponsors here for all 7 hours, all week long of SEC Media Days coverage.
And Dan, let's be honest, we can't do this 7 hours without great sponsors, without great partners, and it's not cheap getting out here.
I was going to say the hardest part is, you know, I don't know if we're leaving town without exactly. Without some sponsors, helping us get there. And so, yeah, thanks to everybody who helped make this trip possible. I was telling Bill during the previous segment, you get to hear from the commissioner, which is always really exciting, and there's news including Atlanta next year for SEC Media Days, going back to the College Football Hall of Fame. Might be All-Star Weekend again.
It is.
You know, it could be the same week as the All-Star Game and the Home Run Derby next year in Atlanta. But today we didn't. It was light on Auburn because only one of the four teams, Vanderbilt, is on Auburn's schedule this year. Teams like LSU and Ole Miss, traditionally, you know, for decades, were a, you know, in the division era, were teams Auburn saw every year. Not the case anymore, and it was still exciting to hear from Lane Kiffin and Brian Kelly, nevertheless.
I hope we go to 9-26, because if we go to 9, we'll get some of those games back. Lane Kiffin said today he's going to miss the traditional games that have become a part of his Ole Miss schedule, so I don't know for sure. I think there's a faction that want 9. There may be some pushback on it. Yeah, we know we got 8 next year, but 26 maybe. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, hopefully they can. Hopefully they can work that out. I should have asked Greg Sankey if he's ready to shake ESPN upside down and get that money out of their pockets in order to convince them to go to 9 games in the SEC. But Commissioner Sankey did have some. He had some interesting stuff to say. We talked about. You know, I was able to ask him his level of satisfaction with the current playoff model as we go into the first year of the 12 team. There's an expectation the SEC could be well represented in the very first 12 team college football playoff.
Andy Staples from On3's picked 5 SEC teams, and one of them's not Missouri. So were you able to have Greg Sankey on your program face to face?
No, we just started in the last 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes.
So. Oh, that's right. So have you recorded something? Or are you just talking about?
Yeah,
I was in the
E-room with Sankey. Was able to answer a couple of questions.
You all always ask great questions, and I'm excited. The commissioner is going to join me live tomorrow.
Oh, wonderful!
I think it's in hour 2. If anybody driving around the Auburn-Opelika area wants to know, Sankey will be on tomorrow at 1:20, so an hour 3. And excited to talk to him about a few things.
And including the possibility of the SEC moving to 9 games, I imagine, would be one of many interesting things.
And also, Dan, keep in mind, this current CFP contract is over after 25. So 26, we could see a whole new thing again. So I got to ask him where he stands on that.
Yeah, should be very exciting. So of the teams that we heard from today, of the coaches we heard from today, anything stand out to you? I mean, I've been using sort of the Auburn lens here, but teams, you know, LSU still on Alabama's schedule, and Ole Miss could very well be, you know, if they're as good as people say they are, they could be a team in the postseason that folks.
Let me say this about LSU. You know, they had the Heisman Trophy winner last year, had the same dude the year before. And have not scared a title. Nussmeier may be really good. He ain't Jaden Daniels. And I've said this, Dan, and I hope I'm not beating a dead horse. I don't think he's an elite coach. I think he's a really good coach. I don't think you can call Brian Kelly an elite coach. And I think this season may prove that out.
I wonder how many coaches, you know, who have gotten as far as the national championship game, you know, wouldn't meet the bill of elite. I mean, I guess because the only thing left in, you know, to do for him is to win.
Yeah.
Is to win it all. But it's I know he needs to win the conference at LSU. You know, there's some things he hasn't quite accomplished yet. But it's I agree. What I'll agree with is replacing Jaden Daniels is incredibly difficult. Now, he's got the luxury of a guy who a lot of people think was a starting caliber quarterback the last couple of years. There was competition in 22 between Nussmeier and Daniels. If you're going to replace Jaden Daniels in this era,
right,
to have someone who's been waiting in the wings of Nussmeier's quality is a luxury. But you're right. They weren't able to get over the hump with Daniels trying to do it without him. You're going to need that defense to get a lot better than they were last year.
Oh, good heavens. Absolutely. And it would be nice if he could be competitive in the postseason, which he hasn't been. When he was at Notre Dame, they made the national championship game. They got absolutely smoked, worse than five SEC teams that Alabama played that year. Then he made the playoff. Clemson smoked him once. Alabama smoked him once. We'll see. If he gets it done, I'll be the first to say how wrong I was. I'm just going to have to see it.
This is a pivotal year. You know, post Jaden Daniels, year three. I mean, I think if LSU is looking good at the end of this year, folks will feel very good about the situation. If they're shaky this year, you do wonder about the future of the program.
And he's talking very confidently about this team, and he has said this is a big. He's basically said, Dan, what we're saying. This is a big year for us. We've got to show that we're ready, and I'm not sure they are ready. We'll see.
Now we got Bill, Brian, and Coach Don Dunn back in the studio.
I love it.
Anchoring our coverage. You know, you're talking about LSU getting smoked a couple of times in the postseason. Don Dunn's no stranger to smoking the brisket out there.
I've heard stories about how good he is at that.
And the legendary competition that there was, back in the day between the members of Coach Tubbs' staff.
Waiting for an invite to their next cookout.
Anytime, buddy. I'd love to have you.
Well, I would love to sit there and break bread with you, Coach.
Tell some old stories and a lot of fun times.
Hey, guys, how big and how deep is Radio Row over there? I'm just trying to imagine. I've heard some folks talking about Radio Row. We've seen it grow, Doug, from the days when there weren't but maybe a couple of people that they looked funny at going, what are you doing here, to an unbelievable gauntlet over the years. How is it in Dallas?
Chuck Dunlap told me it's the most they've ever had, right at 50 or more.
Wow.
And that's kind of surprising, guys, because I think if it were in Atlanta this year, they would be even more than that. Mm-hmm. They actually turned people down on credentials this year, Bill.
I don't think they've ever done that.
Exactly.
And yet we got in somehow.
Yeah, somehow.
Really?
Now, here's the deal, Bill. I did a little video thing. I posted it on Facebook if you want to go. And I had my intern go from the very first of Radio Row all the way to the end. So if you want to kind of
I'll definitely check that out.
It's on my Facebook page, but yeah, man, it's crazy around here.
That's cool.
I believe there are I think the tables go all the way up into the 60s, right? I think there are maybe 50 or 60 tables over the course of. We're in sort of the hallway outside the main ballroom, Bill. And I would say there is 100 yards, maybe 150.
We were thinking
of tables facing each other.
Oh, that's good. I remember when it got to the point, the Winfrey, that we were out there in the little area as you headed into the mall, into the Galleria. And that was pretty stupid when you're sitting out there next. Yeah, we were sitting out next to the piano, I think.
And the cool thing about it is when you see this, and so many people are doing podcasts now and all that, but Bill, you know this, Dan, you know this. Some of these people we don't see but once a year.
Right.
So it's really kind of cool to reconnect with some of the guys and gals that we see only at SEC Media Day.
Yeah, to me, that was really that was the best thing about Media Days, was seeing some people that you might see once a year. But then, it could be teams that rotate on and off. So it might be somebody you only saw, once or twice every 6 years or something like that. So, yeah, that's the thing I miss about being there. I don't miss the travel. or some of the other. But and the, what you always hope is that you get some interesting, entertaining comments, not just the same old from the participants.
Bill, we'll get you back. We'll get you back in Atlanta next year. I feel like
I got to go to Atlanta Wednesday anyway. So I mean, you know.
Yeah, you know, you know what he's doing in Atlanta on Wednesday?
What?
Got a well. I'm sort of making it. I'm making it the summer where we're catching up with a lot of bands, a lot of acts, a lot of concerts.
You've done it already.
Oh well, yeah. We've already seen Heart and the Stones here recently. Wednesday night we've got Foreigner, Styx, and John Waite.
Oh man!
At the Ameris Bank Amphitheater.
I had a friend that sent me some video of the one just this past Saturday night. I think they had Journey and somebody else was with them. Over in Atlanta.
Oh,
so,
man. How did I miss that?
I don't know.
Oh, you need it. I'm
now,
disappointed.
Now, tonight, Bill, I'm going to the Home Run Derby. I'm leaving in about
you are.
20 minutes.
You know what I said, Dan, on the Doug on the show was they should have let the media take the place of the little leaguers in the outfield shagging the balls.
Yeah, we bought tickets. About five of us are
That's
going.
That's great.
And I'm excited just to experience it. I was told, because I asked, that if you have a chance to go to either one, the game or the Home Run Derby, go to the Home Run
Derby. I'd rather go to the Home Run Derby.
Yeah, that's what I was told.
And there were there's a lot of interest in the Home Run Derby tonight. I was checking out the secondary market for some tickets, and it's a little
three digits.
Yeah, it's a little pricey to get in. I may try a little harder next year when we're in
Atlanta. That's right.
Oh
Bill,
yeah,
you're gonna get a chance to go check it out next year.
Well, Bill, wanted you know you heard what Doug had to say earlier in the segment about his skepticism of LSU. Is that fair to say?
That's
fair. You talked to some.
I've been that way for a few years.
Yeah, people were skeptical of him. It seems like a lot of people are for through the years. I don't know. I think LSU has got a chance to be really, really good. I think Garrett Nussmeier is very talented. I mean, I thought he had a fantastic bowl game. If their defense is a little bit better. That's their defense was just awful last year. Didn't look anything like an LSU defense. I don't doubt that they will score a lot of points. Brian Kelly's a really good offensive coach. I just want to see how much they have improved defensively. Is Harold Perkins really comfortable where he is now? Because last year he looked out of place. He was so dominant as a freshman, and then last year just didn't look comfortable being a true linebacker that would occasionally put his hand on the ground. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. I think we'll find out pretty quickly because USC is going to test that LSU defense in game one.
Yeah, and then they got UCLA, a week later, 2 weeks later?
It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy, isn't it?
Ten power five.
I mean, who knew that we'd have the SEC playing two Big Ten teams, and they're both from L.A.?
Yeah, and the California team we're playing is from the ACC.
That's right.
By the way, Cal's going to come in with the ACC pass.
Kids will never – I mean, at least my opinion is most young people really struggle with geography, and it's just going to make it worse.
So, here's my deal on LSU. I believe he lost four games his first year. They lost three last year.
Yep.
They lose the Heisman Trophy guy. And so I have to ask my question, okay, what's he done? And what people still hang their hat on is what he's done is go for two in overtime and beat Alabama. But what else has he done?
Well, he won the West that first year.
That's
right?
year.
Lost to Georgia.
And if you look at his career, and I heard somebody asking this earlier today, year three has been his huge step forward everywhere he's been. And it's year three at LSU. We'll see.
Yeah.
Now, and as for Harold Perkins, Bill, I thought there was a sort of an interesting exchange from Brian Kelly in the small room today, where he mentioned, their plan is to play Harold Perkins in the box. They want him between the tackles because they thought that last year, keeping him outside the tackles, teams would scheme to the other side of the field and try to avoid him. And if you play him in the middle, you're not going to be able to have that luxury. I'm very curious to see how that plan works out.
I got to tell you, Bill, I hadn't forgiven him for how he used Harold Perkins 2 years ago. I mean, last year. 2 years ago, he was a stud.
Oh, he was.
And then last year we're going, where's Harold Perkins? Why would they have changed anything from 22 to 23?
Trying to make it a more read and react versus see and attack.
I also think that what I heard, and Tex may be able to chime in with this, or I'm sure you can find some folks there. What I had heard was that Harold Perkins and his people felt that it would be better for him, for the NFL, for him to adjust a little bit and not be just as freeform as he was as a freshman.
If you don't get that done, Dan, he's going to say, I'm going to go play somewhere else.
That's an interesting one for a coach to juggle, right? Because you got to decide, you know, how
Yeah, it's not like the old days. It's not like, well, yeah, it's either my way or the highway, because that highway is wide open and they can play anywhere next year.
Don, did you have a lot of players tell you where they were going to play?
Not many.
Only one time.
Yeah.
Probably told them where they could go then.
Jay Ratliff, I was a little worried about him. I thought he might throw me out the window when we moved him from defensive end to tackle. But $7 million later, he was happy.
And absolutely. Guys, if you'll allow me just to plug one thing I'm going to do tomorrow. I had a chance to sit down with Cale Gundy, former Oklahoma quarterback, whose brother is Mike Gundy,
right,
who recently stuck his foot in his mouth a little bit at Big 12 Media Days. I asked him about that and also about Oklahoma. I'll play that audio on tomorrow's Max Roundtable.
That's good. Looking forward to it, Doug. Y'all are doing a great job.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Back with more from Dallas. And, again, Bill, Don, and Brian here in the studio with Drew running the controls for all of us. Stick with us. As a matter of fact, come on in and join us if you've got a question or comment. 334-321-1390. That'll get you through here on the Monday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Am I bringing this one back? Welcome
yeah, I was going to let. Well, okay. I figured since you're anchoring one from there, though, you could bring us back on every one.
Oh, okay, I did.
And
the last
if you
one.
Need us, just sort of call on us.
Well, I'm here by myself now. I got somebody coming at 5. I think we're going to talk to Ty Richardson around 5. I know at some point the J Boy is going to do a drive by as well. We got a lot of audio to run with SEC Media Days coverage live from Radio Row as we wrap up. The first day, wind down the first day. 7 straight hours of coverage here on ESPN 106.7. Haven't talked a ton of Ole Miss. Again, they're not on the schedule for Auburn, but this is a year where expectations are unusually high for the Ole Miss Rebels, right, Bill?
Well, when LSU doesn't play, Ole Miss. Ole Miss gets a bit of a break in its schedule as well. So, and with Jackson Dart and the talent that Ole Miss has coming back. Yeah, they're going to, as you said, they're going to be a preseason top 10 team. I mean, they don't play Auburn or Alabama. And let's see there. Who do they get?
I know they host Georgia.
They host Georgia and Oklahoma. They're two. I would say probably. Well, they're at LSU, so those are their. Those are their. Should be their three toughest ball games in conference. Their non-conference schedule. I guess Wake is probably the toughest team they play in non-conference. They've got Furman, Middle Tennessee, Georgia Southern, and at Wake. So I mean, it's a very manageable schedule for a talented Ole Miss team.
Yeah, I mean it's 4 out of conference games where they should be I don't want to overlook Wake Forest, but I think it's 4 out of conference games where Ole Miss should have the advantage going in, and then they open conference play at home against Kentucky, at South Carolina. I think it's understandable. People think Ole Miss should be 6-0 before they go to Baton Rouge. And you wonder, you know, where you go from there with LSU, Ole Miss, or with LSU, Oklahoma, Georgia. They got Arkansas, they got State, they got Florida. I mean, it's I would think it's a schedule where if Ole Miss can handle the teams that they seem to be that they will go into the season projected over, you know, if they can take care of business in those games, it comes down to how good are you going to be at LSU, at home against Georgia, and at home against Oklahoma. I mean, if they can win.
If they win one of those three, yeah, and beat the other teams, they're 10-2.
I mean, at 10-2,
they could lose two of those ball games and still be a team that I would think 10 wins in this league is going to get you in the playoff.
Ten wins, including, you know, if one of those three is a needle moving win, you know what I mean? If one of those three teams is really good and Ole Miss can still beat them, yeah, you would think that a 10-2 Ole Miss team would have a really good shot at being included in the first 12-team playoff. I mean, Doug was saying Andy Staples has five SEC teams in his projected 12-team playoff. I think there's I think four or five certainly is a possibility, especially if you start, you know, if there are multiple 10-win teams that aren't in the SEC championship game. And I wonder, you know, how the committee would view a 10-2, or, you know, Greg Sankey raised the possibility. You know, you looked at Georgia, said Georgia's playing, I don't want to get this wrong, Bill, Georgia's at Texas, at Alabama, and at Ole Miss.
That is correct.
Those are all.
Well, Georgia's had a relatively, relatively easy schedule over the years. One, because they're in the East, and secondly, because they seem to miss Alabama an awful lot every time the conference expanded. So the SEC may be paying them back a little bit, but they're also at Kentucky. Their four road games are Lexington, Tuscaloosa, Austin, and Oxford. That is a tough road schedule for a team that a lot of people are picking to win the national title.
And I think, Drew, if you check the Twitter account, I think I sent Drew the link to the Greg Sankey interview. So he talks about Georgia's schedule in there because his thing. And I don't want to spoil too much, but you know what? Just run it, and we'll talk about it afterward. Because there's if you get the chance, like Greg Sankey, he raises an interesting point about the college football playoff and the criteria for inclusion, especially now that we're going to 12 teams.
Yeah, one of the things, and I don't know if he addressed this in the small room. I heard some of the comments that he made in the large room when he was talking about the possibility. Something that a lot of people haven't thought about is, you know, you don't have division winners anymore.
Right.
You're going to take the top two teams, and now there are what are the tiebreakers to get to select the top two teams in the SEC. That could be really interesting with everybody, with the possibility of, two or three teams with the same record. You know, you might have one team that has the best record and three teams behind them, and they may not have all played each other.
Mm. Oh, certainly. No, I mean, how they figure it out, and I know they have until – he answered this in the big room.
Yeah, it was an interesting answer.
Yeah, like they still will get to, and maybe he doesn't want to jump the gun.
Yeah, he said, we've got plenty of time to figure that out. It's like,
well, they have a month. I mean,
me a question I don't know the answer to yet.
6 weeks or so until then, but no, that is something they'll need to figure out before the games are played, certainly, and you don't want to be making that up on the fly, and in a system where it won't be surprising at all if there is a tie between a couple of teams at 7-1. And you got to figure out what the tiebreaker is,
or
a couple of 6-2 teams or something. You got to figure out a way to send teams. Look, maybe you'll have 2-8 teams that didn't play each other. Maybe
could.
I think under not, virtually
yeah, it's not likely.
Under virtually any other circumstance, you're going to need tiebreakers, and you're going to need to start. You're going to need to figure out, you know, who's in and who's out.
All right, we'll get to our final break. We'll see if we can find all of the audio. We have some, but yeah, that's something that I know everyone wants to hear is comments from the participants there at Media Days. It's day one of the SEC Media Days in Dallas. Our Dan Peck is there covering for us, and it's of course made possible by the fine folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, the Plaza Bar and Lounge, Roots Real Estate, State Farm Insurance Agent Callie Bryan Chaddick, Wisdom Law Firm, and University Ace Hardware. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
Achilles tendonitis is...
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. SEC Media Days coverage. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck on Radio Row at the Omni in Dallas, Texas. First time the SEC takes Dallas for SEC Media Days. Announced earlier today, Commissioner Sankey let us know that Atlanta will be the location for next year's SEC Media Days. Second consecutive year that SEC Media Days and the Major League Baseball Home Run Derby and All-Star Game will be taking place in the same market. I would imagine at the same time. I don't know if I guess they could miss each other by a week.
Maybe. I would say it's year. Probably pretty likely that it's going to be at the same. I'm sort of hoping that it is. It'd be more incentive to be over there.
My guess would be the two events could intersect again next year, but we'll wait and see. You know, we have more details about that. But the announcement earlier today that Atlanta will have SEC Media Days next season. Heard from Ole Miss, LSU, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt today. Couple of you've got and you run the gauntlet there as far as expectations go, don't you? From a pair of teams in LSU and Ole Miss that folks think have an excellent chance at the 2024 college football playoff, now that it's expanded to 12 teams. Meanwhile, South Carolina and Vanderbilt, two teams that struggled as much as anyone in the league last year. Shane Beamer in a, I wouldn't call it a make or break year. I think if it's disappointing this year, the sense I get talking to South Carolina people is that a disappointing season this year for Shane Beamer with a brutal schedule would put him on the hot seat for next year. But I don't think it's a situation where if they're not 6-6, he's going to lose his job this season. I don't know if there's necessarily the appetite for a hard reset in South Carolina, especially with a coach who has maintained a degree of popularity in the community. But I think the team needs to be better than they were last season.
Yeah, now one thing I did see was that Shane Beamer was asked about Robbie Ashford today, and he's going to be what I believe he called him a what was the description? He said he's going to be a
I'm on the edge of my seat here.
He didn't say backup, but he said he will be
I'm blanking on it. Well, I'll tell you what. There's far more talk about Lenoris, right? The
yes.
quarterback who went through most of the offseason for South Carolina as the starter. You know, it sounds like
he's going to compliment Lenoris Sellers. Now, I don't know if that means he's going to sit on the sideline and say good job, or how much he's going to play. I always thought that's funny when I hear so and so is going to compliment them.
Well, yeah, you don't know if it's compliment with an I or an E,
right?
You know, it's one or the other there. So in the case of Robbie, I mean, I think they like what he's brought to them, but he doesn't necessarily project as the starter opening day. Although it's still very much a competent. Luke Doty talked about the former South Carolina quarterback who's now moved to wide receiver and is, I think, officially listed as an athlete on the depth chart. He's a receiver slash running back slash might take some snaps at quarterback himself, having played that position before. But I think someone like Luke Doty, he's talking about the competition. He's talking about what Robbie's bringing. But they seem very, very excited about Lenoris
Sellers.
Lenoris Sellers. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean that was pretty much the only thing that caught my eye from South Carolina.
Beamer said, and I think it was in the main room where he said, I really like my team. Most of you don't, but that's okay. I think it's how Shane Beamer described it, and they probably will be projected. You know, I would expect South Carolina to finish somewhere between 15 and 13 in the preseason voting here, and so he's probably accurate in saying that he likes his team more than a lot of the voting members here at SEC Media Days do, but they'll have a lot of opportunities to knock off impressive teams and pick up needle moving victories. It's I guess that's the good news. Is that you'll have a lot of opportunities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll have plenty of opportunities.
You'll have a lot of opportunities to beat good teams.
Yep. We're running short of time here in hour number one. I was about to say this, and I get a text from someone saying, you know, we need to go ahead and promote this the way it should be promoted. It's Dan Does Dallas. I swear I was about to say that.
Oh, baby.
And wait till I tell you who it came from. But I know that is hilarious. But no, what do you got lined up in hour number two, Dan?
I think we should. My old buddy Ty Richardson from Hit That Line, Arkansas is not going till Thursday, but they've got a lot of opponents. This week he's an insightful guy about a lot of stuff. So we'll talk with Ty at some point in hour number two. I'm still threatening. I'm gonna find the J Boy. He's around here somewhere, Bill. Jake Crane's in the house. We'll run some audio too. Didn't do any of that in hour number one. So stay tuned, folks, because we got a full show planned.
All right, Bill, Coach Don Dunn, Brian Matthews here. We'll update the Major League Baseball draft is how it pertains to Auburn as well. And more in hour number two of The Drive, which is coming up.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Coach Don Dunn, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. Dan Peck is in Dallas at the Omni Hotel representing The Drive and sort of anchoring from there. Day one of SEC Football Media Days. Greg Sankey and four teams today, LSU, Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. Four more teams on tap tomorrow. It'll be four teams a day for 4 days. It's easy now with 16 teams in the Southeastern Conference, the official the first time that all of the SEC media is going to have an opportunity to get to meet Texas with Steve Sarkisian, Oklahoma with Brent Venables and their players. Auburn goes on Thursday. As a matter of fact, one of the last, Auburn and Kentucky, I believe, are the last two teams on Thursday afternoon. So Dan's out there. Jacob Goins of On the Line is taking his show out to Dallas. You heard from Doug Amos of the Max Roundtable in hour number one, and Doug's there. So 7 hours of programming coming from Dallas. We have some audio from day one of the SEC Media Days we'll get to here in just a little while. We do want to let you know you can join in. You can still join us here on The Drive by calling The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. You can text us on The Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, who also are sponsors of The Drive podcast, and the text box number 334-564-1840. We're just underway here in hour number two of The Drive, and as usual, that is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And before we check back in with Dan, we'll get to the phone, and Jerry is up first this hour. Hey Jerry.
Guys. Yeah, I watched some of the Major League Baseball draft last night, and I was curious how many prospects or players we lost in the draft.
Yeah, great. We were just about to get to that. Brian, just checking out as day two of the draft, which goes through round 10, is complete.
Yeah, and just one more day left. Tomorrow it'll be rounds 11 through 20, starting at 1 o'clock Central Time. But so far, Auburn's had just two former players drafted. Right-hander pitcher Chase Alsup in the fourth round of the Baltimore Orioles today. And then later today, left-handed pitcher Tanner Bowman went to the New York Yankees in the ninth round. Now, so far, there have been no Auburn signees, no Auburn transfers, none of the guys that are
none of the guys that have eligibility left have been drafted. Which I mean that is great news thus far for Auburn.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, and then in case you weren't listening, Brian was talking about. I mean, Auburn with a big addition over the weekend, a big addition and a huge return over the weekend as well.
Absolutely, Cade Fisher, top flight left-handed pitcher from Florida, has experience starting and coming out of the bullpen. Has a fastball in the upper 90s, a ton of experience in postseason. I have a chance to be a number one starter or weekend starter at Auburn. He is transferring in for this upcoming season. And then Auburn got big news I guess it was 2 or 3 days ago maybe.
It was either Saturday. Yeah. I think it was Saturday.
Kubrin Murray, Big Kansas, tweeted out and said that he would be returning to Auburn for next year. So that's a big left-handed bat right there in the middle of your lineup, probably batting third or fourth, and then a guy who's become a really solid first baseman too. So that's a big addition for Auburn baseball. And just the way things are going now with all the – I think they're up to 9 transfers, if I'm not mistaken, 8 or 9. And then all the guys coming back, and then, you know, a top 5 signing class that looks like most of those guys are going to be in. You're going to have a really big roster and a ton of competition coming up later this fall.
Great to hear. You know, SSC was really represented well. I mean, bunch of players picked in the top round.
They were. And some of Auburn's SEC rivals were hit pretty hard in the draft. You know, LSU had some guys picked fairly early.
Texas A&M, Arkansas. Yep.
So far, Auburn's managed to not have that happen. Now, when we get through rounds 11 through 20, teams can still take a player and give them more money if they save some from the first 10 picks. So there's this pool of money that they can pull from. So there's still a possibility they could go back and maybe take a guy they felt like was a second or third rounder and take him in the 11th or 12th round. So it's not over, but so far so good for that Auburn signing class.
Yeah, sounds good. Great show.
Appreciate the call, Jerry. 334-321-1390. Hey, there is a little bit of local news, though, with the Major League Draft today. Boston, the Red Sox, took South Alabama center fielder Will Turner, who's from Auburn High, in the 7th round.
Good for him.
Yeah, so congratulations to Will. All right, I believe we've got Dan with us out in Dallas.
I'm back. You guys should be able to hear me.
Yeah, so, we got so you
with,
fine.
With us. Sorry, I had to step away for a sec. Did you guys talk about Cooper?
And, yes.
So he's. I mean, would you think that if the draft, if he doesn't get good news soon, that could increase the likelihood that he's playing for Auburn next year?
Oh, he's already announced it, Dan. As a matter of
fact,
I guess while you guys were en route to Dallas, he announced that before. The second round even got started. He announced he's coming back.
Exciting! All right, that's great news for I think Auburn was looking at preserving as much of the middle of that lineup as possible and bolstering the pitching staff. And I mean, what you got Ike back, you got Cade Ballou back, you got Cooper McMurray back. I mean that's for a team that needs to be better than they were last year. It's nice to have that middle of the order back.
Oh yeah. I mean things right now look good with no. No commitments or transfers, no signees or transfers that have been taken through the first 10 rounds. I said this earlier, Dan. I mean, last night on the MLB Network, I heard that one of the analysts felt that that Auburn signee, and again, what's his name, Brian?
Yeah, and he was a late addition, Demarion Bubb Terrell. I think Bubb is his nickname.
Okay, Demarion Terrell, yes. The analyst felt that he was the best high school player left after round 1, and now he hasn't been taken through 10 rounds. That's got to be good news for Auburn.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's a signability thing too,
yep,
right? Teams might be thinking, usually when a player that talented slips as far as this young man has slipped, it's not just about what he could potentially provide on the field. So yeah, it's SEC Media Day is not the only thing going on, and certainly not the only thing with an impact on Auburn athletics going on right now with the Major League Baseball draft underway as well.
No, and then you've got former Auburn baseball signee who is one of the top favorites for the Home Run Derby tonight, in Gunnar Henderson.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing to predict. You know, I do like the changes that they've made to to the Home Run Derby model.
I think Pete's got a really good chance of picking up his third title.
And you know what? And what an audition it could be for the I mean, look, you don't decide to trade for a guy because he does really well in the Home Run Derby.
No.
Generally speaking, that's not the thing that moves the needle.
Pete Alonso has shown he's got legit power, you know, over a few years.
Well, you do, and people might be trading for Pete Alonso in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, that is true.
So maybe it is an audition. First of all, don't get hurt. And second of all, yeah, you know, see if you can put on a show and bolster that trade value to whatever contender might come in. Not the Mets aren't contenders, but whatever contender might come in and try to pry Alonso away.
All right, day one of SEC Media Days is wrapping up. What sort of caught your eye and ears today?
I mean, it's hard not to focus on Ole Miss and LSU. You know, nothing against South Carolina and Vanderbilt, but the expectations are very different this season for LSU and Ole Miss than they are for those other two schools. And so, you know, you pay attention to, what, like we were saying in the first hour, Garrett Nussmeier, LSU quarterback Jackson Dart, who is an incredibly experienced, I mean, one of the more experienced quarterbacks in the league as far as the number of games played, number of he might be. I mean, he might be the one guy in the league who maybe has more career passing yards than Peyton. Maybe. I don't even – maybe not. He might – you know, we were looking at that, Bill, last week.
Yeah,
you know,
we were looking at it, and Brian is a little
surprising. College quarterbacks.
It's surprising. I mean, Peyton has 8,200-plus yards passing for his career.
Yeah.
I mean, so Jackson Dart, very experienced as well, and in a do or die season where he's, you know, one of the top players returning to the SEC. I think we focused a lot on Quinn Ewers and Carson Beck and Jalen Milrow, understandably so. I think those are your three primary contenders for.
No, Peyton's got more career passing yards than Dart does.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Yeah. I mean, well, Dart didn't play that much at SC, so it would make sense.
Right.
I mean, it's really just the two seasons at Ole Miss that would be most of Jackson Dart's college career. So that fits. I think the only guy we came up with was McCall, right? Active.
Grayson McCall's got 10,000.
Yeah, active college football quarterback. By the way, he'll be one of the 19 quarterbacks at ACC Media. You see that?
I heard
unbelievable.
There are 17 teams in the ACT, Brian. And they're sending 19 quarterbacks.
It's going to
take more quarterbacks than there are teams.
It's going to take a month to do ACC Media Days.
Oh man,
they're going to be there. They're going to be there a month.
Any player that you were really impressed with today?
I mean, so the you know, there's some guys that run under the radar. My man Boogie is one of the top defensive linemen from South Carolina. I really liked Gunner, the Vanderbilt offensive lineman. Who had some and Luke Doty had the coolest cowboy hat. I guess there's a station here. They're personalizing cowboy hats for the you can get a personalized, I shouldn't call it, a personalized 10-gallon hat here at one of the stops, and a couple of the guys have been proudly showcasing their new fashion accessory when they come into the small room, and Luke Doty seemed very proud of his fancy new cowboy hat.
All right, Dan Peck there in Dallas at the Omni. Hard to imagine that the demand was so high that there were actually some credential requests turned down. I wonder what types of media or professed media got turned down by the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, considering who I'm seeing that got in, right? I mean, it's
I always think that.
Seems highly unlikely that too many folks were turned away. I asked I asked Brian Kelly. I'll see if I can get that answer for you guys too. I asked him about just sort of the offseason Nussmeier is having and sort of, you know, what have been the emphasis, you know, the points of emphasis when you move on from a Heisman Trophy winner who had the kind of season Jaden Daniels did to a guy like Nussmeier who's been waiting in the wings and waiting his turn. But and you can tell, you know, that's if Brian Kelly didn't feel good about what he had in Garrett Nussmeier, it would, you know, a lot of the offseason would be pretty confusing, right? Why didn't they go and try to bring in competition? You know, why is he as confident as he is? I think he thinks, you'd think he's got a pretty good idea what Nussmeier has. Nussmeier's been there since Brian Kelly got there.
Now, you got a question in for him, didn't you?
Yeah, no, that was my question to Kelly was absolutely about Nussmeier. And it was I think I was the first one up for Brian Kelly, and it was about, you know, replacing Jaden Daniels and where do you go from here?
And I heard I heard Garrett respond, you know, talking about that as well. So it's interesting. I mean, they have had an awful lot of faith in him for a long time. They've really felt he is going to be very, very good. And again, I always take it with a grain of salt when I hear how tight battles are for starting jobs. But sounded like he and Jaden Daniels were in a pretty good battle a couple of years ago when Jaden first showed up.
Well, I mean, Bill, if you remember the game where Jaden Daniels was struggling and they went to Nussmeier.
Right.
I mean, in Auburn. Yeah. I mean, some of it was injury there. I know, you know, Daniels was banged up and had taken some hits in that game, but I think some of it was just there. That offense wasn't producing at all. They made the change in the second half of that game early in Daniels' tenure to go with Nussmeier, and I think that would tell you how close the competition was that Brian Kelly would actually think, you know, going to Nussmeier gave him a better chance to win.
All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Again, you can join us by calling 334-321-1390. Dan in Dallas, Bill, Don, and Brian here in the studio on the Monday Drive.
When bones get out of joint or vice.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of The Drive, live from SEC Media Days in Dallas, Texas, at the Omni on Radio Row. The media obligations have ended for the day. I just saw the Vanderbilt crew making their way downstairs after passing through the car wash. You got it's two rooms, the big room and the small room.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much everything else is ESPN/SEC network related.
Right, they're breakout type rooms.
Yeah, they have mm-hmm. there are three different SEC network rooms, plus a Marty and McGee room, plus you got the SEC radio room. I know there's a Sirius XM room as well, but the vast majority of it outside of the big room and the small room are ESPN/SEC network related. Bill, I sent Drew a couple of the audio clips. You want to hear Greg Sankey talking about the college football playoff?
Yeah, I think Drew's got it ready. So let's do that. You want to set it up?
So I just asked him about I think my question's in there. So I'm not sure how much setup this needs.
Commissioner, the expanded playoff is here this year. Obviously, hope that multiple SEC teams will represent the conference in the postseason. Are you in favor of a system with automatic qualifications for the college football playoff, or would you prefer a committee choose the top 12 teams regardless of conference affiliation or conference championships?
I was always one that who would have advocated for just the top fill-in-the-blank number of teams. So there was a lot of speculation back in 2019 when the focus on changing the 14 format came into being that I'd be fine with just picking the top eight. I'd be fine picking with the top 12, but there's always compromise in there. So we have not allocated automatic bids, but spots for conference champions, since that was one of the philosophical underpinnings of the selection process. That includes a selection committee's role. I do think we have to be really clear about how that selection committee will conduct its business. We've done much of that work, but we're going to go through some learning processes. Like, you look at Georgia's schedule this year. I think that's a great football team from what I read. They play at Alabama, at Texas, and at Ole Miss. I don't think there's another team in the country that faces that type of away schedule. That's almost half of their conference schedule. How do you evaluate a 9-3 or a 10-2 team that faces that rigor, plus Clemson in a non-conference game, and Georgia Tech on the back end? So 10 of their total schedule is A5 or A4 in the modern era or the updated era, against another team, even from one of the power conferences that might be 11-1 or 10-2, but doesn't.
I think that's all.
That's the end of his class.
That's all we had. Yeah, I was going to say, and the follow-up would be, well, the more conference games you play, the easier it is to evaluate within the conference.
Right, and he's, you know, I think that the nine game thing comes up too, and he tap dances around.
He definitely has been one that before we announced we were going to eight seemed like he wanted a 9-game conference schedule.
Right, and it sounds like it's what you can't say, right? I mean, I don't think Greg Sankey could say, you know, we'll add a 9th game as soon as ESPN forks over the cash. But I think that's what we're talking about here is you know not wanting to add inventory without being compensated for it by your broadcast partner or finding a new broadcast partner for that extra inventory of conference games I thought the Georgia example was interesting. I mean, I would point out Auburn's playing at Alabama, at Georgia, and at Missouri. Which are three teams that are expected to be pretty good as well. Maybe it's not quite at Bama, at Texas, and at Ole Miss, but three very, very good road games on Auburn's schedule too. And yeah, I do wonder, you know, what's the committee going to do with a 10-2 or 9-3 SEC team that played a very difficult schedule, especially if that last spot comes down to that, or an 11-1 Big 12 team, or a 10-2 Big 12 team, or Big 10 team that maybe didn't play as rigorous a schedule. I think we're going to get into there's certainly the potential for messiness, right? I mean, it got messy with four teams. I don't think it's going to get less messy just because you get to 12 now. It could break out into a knife fight or two.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. So it's Sankey today. Is it tomorrow you get the head of the officials?
Yeah, John McDade, right? I believe should be joining us tomorrow, and then on Wednesday it's the chief medical officer of the SEC answering some questions about the conference. So yeah, they try to supplement the four teams with a league representative. There's an AI panel on Thursday. I mean, I personally want more traditional intelligence
How is that relating? I mean, what is that concern?
He even talked about it a little bit with regards to things like officiating, and you know, and working. You know, we're seeing parts of, you know, we're seeing.
Are we actually going to get to things like where we have chips in the ball and be able to tell you what exactly 10 yards is? I've been a proponent of that for a long time.
I think that there are some things in sports like.
If the ball's inbound or out of bounds, or did it cross 10 yards? I mean,
some people get queasy about strike zones.
Oh, no, I got no problem with that. Give me the electronic strike zone.
There are some things like strike zones and like whether or not a ball actually touched a line or didn't touch a line where
it should matter.
Maybe utilizing the, as much technology as possible to get the call right. Is something where, yeah, I think that's absolutely. It drives
me absolutely crazy when I see the chain stretched and we find out whether it's a first down or it's within an inch. And then after they signal first down, the guys just run over to the sideline and look and try to line it up where it starts. You know, you have no idea if you're actually where it was, and it's going to be 10 yards from just where they guessed it was.
You're okay with robots taking over that job?
Absolutely.
Once we get the capability,
I know, I'm taking jobs away from the chain gang and everything.
We'll need to hire someone to build the robots, Bill. So not taking any jobs. No, but I guess the big technology, and I don't know how much we've talked about this today, iPads on the sidelines.
Right.
It's something the commissioner talked about, you know, before the during his remarks earlier today, that you'll have access to in-game technology on the sidelines, you know, replays of things going on in the game, which is that's a pretty significant step for college football, since that has always been pretty explicitly against the rules.
Yeah, that is definitely a step forward. Now it'll be interesting to see, you know, who's handling it. Now that more people can be on the sidelines, that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, the examples I've heard today, Harold Perkins actually was asked about, you know, sort of where he thinks, you know, a sideline iPad with video could help him. And he says, you know, the idea of being able to see, you know, what happened on the last play or the last series and immediately try to correct it instead of having to wait for the film session tomorrow. I'll defer to the coach there. I mean, that's a, that's a, I would imagine that's a useful instructing tool, right? In order, in, you know, being able to show someone the play that just happened, rather than having to having to process it later.
Yeah, that's a huge advantage for corrections on the sideline, because you know you can't always. Sometimes in the box, you think you saw what really happened, but you come in on Sunday morning and you realize, well, no, that really is not what happened. You try to rely on the players coming off the field telling you, but now you have that right there. You can sit down and say, okay, well, you missed the block on the three technique. He slanted inside. It's definitely an advantage. And like Bill said, all these guys that are I don't know who all is going to have them. I don't know how many you can have. I don't know if it's by position coach. I don't know, Brian, do you know any of that? I mean, who can have the pads? Or?
Oh, I'm not sure exactly.
I mean, and then I don't know where they're going to put all these people. The sideline's crowded as can
true.
Be.
Yeah.
That poor get-back coach is going to earn his money this time.
I will mention one thing about this that I really like, and Coach Dunn, I'd like you to add on. But I think for a young coach coming to this business, where it used to be, you know, there are only a couple ways you come in, mostly as a GA, right?
Right.
Now you got a chance to come in as an analyst or whatever your position is, but you can get experience recruiting, you can get experience coaching on the practice field and doing stuff in games. I just think that's a bonus for those young guys.
No doubt. It is a great thing for a young coach. It was so hard to break in. You had to be just lucky. It was a lot of who you knew, not what you knew, unfortunately. And it's a great opportunity, and it should really spark these guys and give them more motivation. It's hard to sit up there and break film down all night long and not be able to coach, not be able to have any input, or even be on the sideline sometimes. So that's a great advantage for a young coach. And if they take advantage of it and learn, and they can prove to the full-time, quote, guys, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. He's energetic. He can coach. He can communicate. He's going to move up, and what a great opportunity! And man, I would have loved to have had about four or five guys to help us. You know, just that we have two GAs back in those days.
I think so.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
You had maybe two, like a high school relations guy, and a
Jimmy Perry.
And
Andy Lutz. They did all the travel. They did everything.
Yeah,
yep.
Jimmy and them did everything, and I don't know how they did it.
Now you've got an assistant for every assistant coach,
right?
Pretty much.
You've got
a team of personnel people and a team of recruiting people.
Well, you've got
at some of the bigger programs, those assistants have assistants, right?
I mean,
you're talking
about. That's what he's talking about. Yeah. I mean, you'd better do that. You'd better keep up and have as many because you surely don't want to be short-staffed compared to anybody else.
And you better, like we talked before, Bill and Brian and Dan, with this portal, you better have somebody there 24/7 watching it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, like, it's almost like watching the Russians, you know, the command centers. What are they doing? Who's coming? What are they doing? Who shot that missile? I mean, it's crazy. Right.
It's like Dr. Strangelove.
Exactly.
In the war room, Coach. All right. We got one of our good friends here, our main guy, Ty Richardson, from Hit That Line. You want to talk to him when we come back, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, I think I found maybe the only quarterback in the SEC that has more yards passing than Peyton Thorne coming back. Graham Mertz, who has an extra year, has 56 more yards passing for his career.
There you go.
Than Peyton Thorne.
So you got two 8,000 career passers in the conference?
I believe that's it.
Wow. How about
all right,
that?
We'll be back. Dan, we'll continue from the Omni in Dallas, day one of the SEC Media Days, as we continue with the Monday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Monday edition of The Drive, live from Dallas, Texas, Radio Row at the Omni Hotel downtown. SEC Media Days, live coverage continuing. First of 4 days, 7 straight hours of live coverage from Media Days on ESPN 106.7 here in in the Auburn-Opelika area. And we are thrilled to welcome in one of our favorites. Arkansas didn't go today. You got Arkansas on Thursday. But we're thrilled to welcome in somebody who's going to be hanging around for all 4 days as well and keeping his finger on the pulse of the conference. From Hit That Line, ESPN, Arkansas, my main man, Ty Richardson. How you doing, Ty?
Dan, it's good to see you. Brother Bill, it's good to be on with you again. I'm excited about this week and excited to be in Auburn, Alabama in September.
This is the first time we've gotten to talk to you since Calipari.
It is.
It's the first time we got to talk. I mean, so this is SEC football media days, but I have to ask you, how are the vibes with Arkansas men's basketball after the last couple of months?
Man, I'll tell you what, they got a nice roster already compiled. Cal was doing some work in Fayetteville, and I'm excited, man. SEC basketball, you think about what Nate Oates is bringing back to Tuscaloosa with Grant Nelson and Sears. You think about what Auburn has at its disposal with Bruce Pearl. I mean, football season, of course, we're talking about it, but guys, these basketball games we're about to see in the start of 2020 are going to be nuts.
And we just got the news today. Auburn and Purdue will play a neutral site game this season in men's basketball. Christmas week in Birmingham. They're going to play another one next year as well. But adding Purdue to an out-of-conference schedule that already includes a trip to Duke in the SEC-ACC Challenge. So Auburn men's basketball with a couple of big ones in the out-of-conference before league play gets rolling. That should be fun.
Yeah.
That should be a couple of fun. You guys have played plenty of big games there at Arkansas, too. You're not missing out on anything like that. This is so it's a different SEC Media Days with the inclusion of Texas and Oklahoma. Today is a little bit different. Auburn's only opponent of the four in the regular season is Vanderbilt, the final team to go. Ole Miss and LSU, a pair of teams Auburn played every year in division play, a pair of teams Arkansas played every year in division play. You know, things are a little bit askew this season. Auburn not playing either LSU or Ole Miss. You guys are gonna see a couple of those teams, aren't you?
Yeah, both coming to Fayetteville this year. It's just weird not playing these SEC West opponents every game this season like you're so accustomed to. I mean, Arkansas's played both Auburn and Alabama every year since they joined the league in 92, and they don't have it. You still got the Tigers, of course, early game in September, but I'm excited to see how Oklahoma and Texas handle these atmospheres, like when Oklahoma comes to Jordan-Hare Stadium and then Texas going to – they got gifted an easy schedule. My goodness gracious, it was gift wrap.
Greg Sankey mentioned during his remarks, you know, when talking about the excitement with Texas and Oklahoma joining the league, he went to the game in Fayetteville in 2021. Is that right? The Arkansas mm-hmm. victory over Texas in 21, and what an atmosphere that was. And I think that was one of his indications of just how excited people were, you know, just how special some of the current SEC rivalries with Texas and Oklahoma are, but also how excited people were for Texas and Oklahoma to join the league, seeing that game in Fayetteville that night.
I mean, I don't think I'll ever see a conclusion to a football game like I saw in Jordan-Hare Stadium back in 2013 with the kick six. But the atmosphere that night was incredible. I know for every Auburn fan listening, that game in either 2010 when y'all came back and won or 2013, there's been other games where Auburn's either come from behind or won miraculously. It's just that sense you beat your bitter rival like you get to see your friends, your family members that wear the opposing colors that next Monday at work, and you get to wear yours proudly. Hopefully they'll be doing that following the game November 16th, but that's going to be a tough ask for that Texas Longhorns squad.
Before we get to Arkansas, I want to ask you about Ole Miss and LSU, the teams that went today, both on the
yep.
schedule. Like you thinking you buying either of those teams as real contenders for the SEC title and or the college football playoff this year?
LSU lost way too much. I mean, you was a Heisman Trophy winner, two best wide receivers. They lost some defensive guys as well. No chance. I know Perkins is back, but I'm not a believer.
Defense struggled a lot last year, too.
So I think it's going to even out. Their offense is going to take a step back, and their defense is going to pick it up a little bit. But Ole Miss, though, I mean, outside of Georgia, you could argue that's the best roster in the SEC. And it's weird saying that about the Rebels, who you probably never in the history of the conference have said that about. And I know they get lost going to Atlanta because they've never been. But maybe it changes this year. Kiffin's, I mean, he's got two 10-win seasons in the last three years. You and I were talking before we came on. If they don't reach 10 wins with this schedule, what happened? Like, what happened with this football team?
No, it's Missouri and Ole Miss strike me as a pair of teams
yep.
where it just feels like you and maybe it's in part because you're not used to talking about Missouri and Ole Miss this year this way. but they both feel like they have 8 or 9 layups on the schedule, where it's just games that they really, you know, shouldn't lose, and that's, you know, you get to 9 wins in an era where 10 could get you in the 12-team playoff.
Yeah.
Like that suddenly is, you know, that's and again, you know, you don't want to start counting the chickens before they hatch or anything, but that Ole Miss schedule, if you believe in them as a top three, top five team in the conference, that's the kind of schedule you would want to make it to the college football playoff.
And I know that Greg Sankey kind of went over the tiebreaker stuff real quick, and he talked about with speaking
sort
with
of
the, yeah with athletic sort directors. Of. But like, think about the scenario of like, I think Georgia's going to have one loss on the season. It's going to be Texas, Ole Miss, or Alabama. It's one of those three, and then they'll win the other 11 games. They'll be in the championship, and then whether it's Texas, whether it's Alabama, one of the teams will. But they'll be 10-2, 9-3. What do you do if that team loses and is then 10-3? And you have two other teams that were 10-2 that just got left out of the championship. Do you then put one of the other two teams above them? This college football playoff is going to be wild to me, the selection upcoming for the, first game and the second week of December.
It would be awful to think like, oh, well, that team was in the college football playoff until they lost the conference championship game, and then they aren't, which I guess is sort of what happened to Georgia last year, 12-0 number one team loses the SEC championship game, and they're out. But no, I think that was one of the things that when Greg Sankey was talking about criteria for the college football playoff being, you know, having a clear understanding of what the committee needs to be looking at. I think he's talking about SEC teams being punished because the win-loss record might not be all that cosmetic, but you look at who they beat and who they lost to, and you can make the case maybe that's one of the 10 or 12 best teams in the country.
Now, I know we've got fans of all different ages listening that would, again, could go into the depths of Auburn football and some of the legendary games that have happened in Jordan Hare Stadium, but imagine, let's say Auburn and Hugh Freeze do something this year that no one expects, and they either make it to the SEC championship game. Can you imagine a home playoff game? They're not a top four seed, but they're one of the other, the other four, five through nine or whatever it is through the math on the fly. That would be one of the craziest atmospheres ever on that campus, because it would be the first ever postseason football game. Like that to me, the idea of having that at any SEC venue is awesome.
Oh, it's hard not to think of. I mean, I don't want to single out the right answers, but I think most of the conference would deliver an unforgettable atmosphere if they hosted a college football playoff game in December.
Yeah,
like most of this league would be.
Even Vanderbilt fans would show up.
Even in half their stadium.
Yeah,
you know, it would. I think that's absolutely right, and we're going to get to see a couple of those in December when the college football playoff, you break away from the bowls and you have a couple of games involving teams playing at home.
And I would make the case. I don't know if I'd say it's the best in the conference. I got a chance to go to Baton Rouge this year. I got a chance to go to and go to the Swamp as well. But I would argue the craziest things happen in Jordan Hare Stadium that I've maybe ever watched. They've heard Arkansas. Trust me, we've been on the wrong side of a few games, 2010, 2020. But just the significance, and maybe not this year, maybe Freeze, it takes him one more year to get to that next level. But like his Ole Miss teams, for example, one of those teams would have been in the college football playoff. There's no reason to believe that they can't, not like top two in the SEC, but maybe that like next tier where they just get in on a technicality almost by being a top three or four.
If you can stay in the top five or the top six of the league by the end of the season, you know, you have a puncher's chance, especially if you play a team like Alabama late with a chance to pick up a signature victory or something like that to tip the scales.
Yeah, that would that just how these games of consequence are going to matter down the stretch. You mentioned Missouri earlier. Arkansas closes out their season in Columbia. They're not going to have the same amount of riding on the line unless we're talking about Sam Pittman's job security as, say, Eli Drinkwitz and company. So you're going to have these teams that get to play spoiler, right? It's like, not that you can't be motivated by other factors, but it's like, hey, we get to prevent this team from going to the playoff because we're their final game this season. And I think for teams like Auburn, Alabama, like to do that to one another, it's always unique, especially in this scenario.
I would hope that teams, you know, the teams, if the season doesn't go well, you know, guys are willing to embrace the spoiler role in a larger college football playoff. I'm worried you're going to have a bunch of dudes deciding that the portals opening in a month or something like that. I would hope, because Auburn has, I mean, there's six games on Auburn's schedule that seem to really make or break, you know, what kind of year they're going to have. You pick the – I mean, and then there are games – I would say the Auburn game, the Arkansas game early isn't one of those – isn't one of the four road games and isn't Texas A&M. But it's a game that if you were to lose at home early to Arkansas, like it has a chance to just absolutely poison the vibes early on. No. And I think in Auburn, like, because you got Oklahoma a week later, you got Georgia a week after that. If you come out of the Arkansas game without momentum, you're going to try to find some at home against Oklahoma or on the road against Georgia or on the road against Missouri. Like, that is a game. You blow a tire against Arkansas, you might not finish the race this year. Like, there's a lot of tough games coming up there. And so that's a game that I think would, like, it is an absolutely pivotal game for Auburn this year at home because a slip up, a stumble, a loss against if Arkansas comes and outplays Auburn the way they did 2 years ago at Jordan-Hare Stadium. If that happens, it could be a really bad sign for what kind of season Auburn's going to have.
A year ago, Peyton Thorne and company went in that stadium, Donald W. Rome, and just did whatever they wanted to. I would hope Arkansas shows a little more fight, a little more feminine step. But you're right. I think every Auburn fan listening right now expects them to beat Arkansas. You should. Arkansas never wins that game on the road, ever. I mean, 2010.
They did 2 years ago.
Coaches get stuck in the elevator in 2014. There's a fumble that should have been turned over in 2010. 2020, Bo Nix fake spot. I mean, there's just like so many occurrences that I think back to playing that game on the road that Arkansas has to go against. And
Dunn is a defensive line coach in the studio. He was there for Tuberville at the buzzer. And was that 07, I think it was? It would have been
pain, and more pain. I mean, they just over and over, a lot of terrible. I mean, it's a good time. The only good memory I can think of is actually when I went a year ago. And, of course, Sky Bar, the best bar in the Southeastern Conference, even with the additions of Oklahoma and Texas.
How about that? It does not change. Now, you were there for Halloween. You were there for Halloween.
Yeah. My goodness gracious.
Sky Bar puts on its best
Auburn, foot forward. Alabama is the brunette capital of the world. I'm not a blonde guy. I am a brunette guy. So there's – you find like girls you want to have fun with at Alabama. You find your wife at Auburn.
All right. So we're talking with Ty Richardson from Hit That Line. ESPN Arkansas. I think the segment's still happening. Auburn's got the conference slate features home games against Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. Road games at Kentucky, Missouri, Alabama, and Georgia. I mean, there are losable games in that slate. I mean, I think there are games where you look and I mean, I don't know how many people in general will be picked to win in Tuscaloosa or in Athens this season. Outside of that, I mean, there seems to be a lot of wiggle room for Hugh Freeze to try to build on what he did in year one.
Let me ask you something, because I genuinely want to know, do Auburn fans want to play Georgia now every year with Wake Kirby? I mean, if I was an Auburn fan, and I get the Alabama, you're always going to be attached to the hip because you're in state, right? You always want that game played in either Auburn or Tuscaloosa. But, do you really want to keep playing Georgia the way that
does Arkansas want to play Texas every year?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, yeah. I mean, when it's something that goes back over 100 years, yes. you do. Yeah. You feel like it's got to turn some point.
And yes, they're hot right now, but that makes a win all that more. I mean, if Auburn had been able to hold on against Georgia in the fourth quarter last year, it would have been a historic moment. Especially, I mean, people forget, Georgia hasn't lost a regular season SEC game since the COVID year. Like, we're talking
that long?
three straight 8-0 regular seasons in the SEC.
We need a Ricardo Lewis moment to happen in the game in Athens this year. And they lost that weird game against South Carolina a few years ago in Athens. So hopefully Auburn – listen, I'll tell you what. Hugh Freeze always loses a game or two they shouldn't, but he'll strap in and win a game or two that you had no business. Maybe it was Alabama when he was in Oxford. Maybe it'll be Georgia when he I guess he's been over, but maybe it changes to that.
Your
point's well made, Bill. You're 100% right. My head's – it's Monday, man. My cobwebs are still going.
I'm just waiting. We mentioned this a while ago. I'm just waiting. You guys out there with our respective teams not going for three more days. I mean, actually, the headline's going to be Dan Does Dallas featuring Ty Richardson.
Parental advisory is recommended.
And heated.
All right, Ty, tell everybody how they can find all the outstanding work you do.
Yeah, hitthatline.com is where our a lot of our online listening is, and we're across ESPN Arkansas. So if you have any family members across the natural state that love the Hogs or friends or whatever, be a great way to get connected with them as best as possible. And, of course, can't wait to go back to Auburn, one of my favorite SEC towns, coming up in September.
And we'll talk to you when we get closer to the Auburn-Arkansas game. We'll hear more from you on ESPN 106.7 this week. I think you'll make a hit on Jacob's show at some point. And then, yeah, we'll definitely talk to you for football season. And there's going to be an Auburn-Arkansas basketball game, too. And like you said, I cannot wait for the battle royal that is going to be this year's SEC basketball season, with Auburn and Alabama coming in with such high expectations, new coaches at Kentucky and Arkansas, and some really cool stuff happening in the league.
That game's in the jungle, too. If it's a weekend game, I'm driving for that game, because that will be one of the best atmospheres that Arkansas plays in all year long.
Have you been to an Auburn home game since the Pearl sort of thing took hold?
Since they lost 5 games in 5 years? I thought Bud Walton is intimidating. And I see this graphic flash across the screen 2 years ago. Auburn, 54-4 at home under Bruce Pearl the last 5 years. And I'm just sitting there like my mouth is gaping. And I was like, yeah, Arkansas is not winning this game.
I mean, the crowds have helped. A lot of it's been the players.
Yeah.
A lot of it's been pretty good players there. Ty Richardson from hitthatline.com, ESPN Arkansas. Thank you, as
Absolutely.
Always. Great work.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Bill.
All right, we'll take a break, Bill.
Yeah, we got to get to our final break. We're running short on time. Stick with us as we wind it down here on The Drive.
Hey, this is Rob from University Ace Hardware. I've been with Ace for about 2 years. I'm a retired manufacturing engineer. I've been in manufacturing.